Have you ever used an AI to generate a block of code or maybe a project outline? And the moment you read the result, you just kind of sigh.
Oh, yeah, I know that exact sigh.
Right. I mean, it might be technically flawless. The syntax compiles perfectly, the grammar is pristine, the logic is completely sound.
But it just doesn't feel like you.
Exactly. It lacks your specific voice, your quirks, your unique way of approaching a problem. It just feels completely sterile.
And that creates this massive cognitive load
Yeah.
for the user. I mean, we assume a tool that writes for us saves time,
You would
right?
think so, yeah.
But when the output is that generic, you end up just staring at a screen trying to decipher a stranger's logic. You spend more time refactoring the AI's output to match your personal style, your internal mental model, than you would have spent just typing the thing out from scratch.
Okay, let's unpack this because we're looking at a brilliant proposed solution to that exact problem today. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here. This is a really exciting one.
It really is. We have a fascinating, incredibly dense markdown document today. It's titled Thinking Away from Theory Attachment 2.MD.
Catchy title, right?
Yeah, very academic. But the mission of our deep dive today is to explore a radically different approach proposed in this text. We want to see how we can explain complex coding principles in a way that is easy to understand, specifically by breaking them down into a personal framework.
Right. An actual mathematical model of your own habits.
Yeah. So the AI stops acting like some all-knowing oracle and starts acting a lot more like, well, you.
The author is essentially proposing a total structural shift in human-computer interaction here.
How so?
Well, instead of the user constantly tweaking their prompts to, force the machine into a specific style, the system is designed to reverse engineer the contours of your individual thought process from the ground up.
And what blew my mind is that it claims to do this using just two pieces of information.
Yeah, just two. It's
Yeah.
wild.
It doesn't ask you to upload your entire GitHub repository or like 10 years of your commit history. The document explicitly asks the user for exactly two code examples.
Right.
First, an early or first version, which the text notes should be rough, maybe even broken or overly simplistic.
Messier the better, honestly.
Exactly. And second, it wants the later or working version, the refined, polished final product.
And that limitation of just two snippets, that's very deliberate. I mean, standard AI models are trained on billions of lines of finished, polished code.
Right, the end product.
Exactly. They understand the end state perfectly, but they have zero visibility into the struggle, right? The iterations or the actual problem-solving sequence that got the developer to that end state.
They just see the finish line.
Exactly. So by requesting the rough draft and the polished draft together, the author is forcing the AI to focus entirely on what we can call the delta.
The delta, the gap between the two.
Right.
When I first read this, it really made me think of watching a painter in a
Oh,
studio.
that's a good analogy.
Like the early version is the messy charcoal sketch on the canvas, just raw geometry, frantic lines, trying to figure out the
To
proportions.
getting the ideas out there.
Yeah. And the later version is the framed oil painting hanging in the gallery. If I only stare at the finished oil painting, I can, admire the technique. But I have absolutely no idea how the artist actually built the layers.
Right, you don't know the process.
Exactly. I don't know if they painted the background first or if they started with the eyes and worked outward. The real story isn't the finished piece, it's the journey between the two.
That's spot on. The final product actively obscures the effort. It hides the dead ends, the structural pivots, all those moments where the developer realized a variable name was confusing and just changed it.
So the AI is analyzing the delta to essentially watch, you think?
Precisely. It maps the vector from state A to state B. It sees that, in the rough draft, you just threw all your logic into one massive function just to see if it worked.
Guilty as charged.
Right, we all do it. And then in the final version, you meticulously broke it apart into three clean helper functions.
But wait, if I'm feeding it a literal garbage first draft, doesn't it run the risk of learning my bad habits? Like, how does it know the difference between a deliberate stylistic choice and a literal mistake I just forgot to fix?
That is the beauty of analyzing the transition rather than just a static document.
Yeah.
The AI isn't learning the garbage itself, it's learning your specific trajectory away from the
Oh,
garbage.
I see.
Yeah, it identifies the errors in the first draft by observing how you actively eradicate them in the second draft. That transition reveals a highly individualized behavioral footprint.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So let's get into the mechanics of how it actually parses that footprint. because the source document explicitly outlines six pillars, six distinct aspects that it extracts by comparing these two versions.
Why the six pillars?
And we need to translate these for you listening because the text gets fairly technical. And our goal is to explain these coding principles in a way that is really easy to understand.
Absolutely.
So the first two pillars it extracts from the Delta are structure and naming.
Yeah, so structure is defined in the text as the organization of the code.
Right.
We're talking functions, classes, the literal order of operations.
Okay.
And naming covers your conventions. Things like camel case, underscores, whether you use highly descriptive variables or just terse abbreviations. Mechanically, the AI is diffing the two files to see the architectural shift.
Right. To make this intuitive, I kind of picture it like organizing a physical workspace, maybe a kitchen.
Okay, let's hear.
So the structure is the floor plan. In my rough draft, I might leave all the ingredients scattered on the counter just to see what I have to work with.
The messy chef approach.
Exactly. But in my final draft, I organize everything. Does the AI see that I prefer my pots right next to the stove or hidden away in a pantry?
Right.
And then naming is how I label my spice jars. Do I print a meticulous label that says, you know, smoked Spanish paprika, harvested 2024? Or do I just slap some masking tape on it and scribble, pop? That is a perfect way to look at it. Because in programming, the machine executes pap and smoked Spanish paprika identically. It really doesn't care.
The computer just needs the reference.
Exactly. But the semantic distance between those two choices for a human is vast. I mean, if a developer uses long descriptive labels, they are prioritizing cognitive offloading.
Meaning they want it to be easy to read later.
Exactly. They want the code to be instantly readable months from now. But if they use terse abbreviations, they might be prioritizing speed or maybe just screen real estate. The AI is scanning the Delta to capture those deeply ingrained human preferences.
But laying out the kitchen is really just the baseline, right? What happens when something goes wrong?
And that leads us to the third and fourth pillars extracted from the Delta, which are error handling and patterns.
Right. So the text defines error handling as how you deal with failures. It lists things like try-catch blocks, if checks, and graceful degradation.
Yes, graceful degradation.
And patterns are defined as the specific code blocks you reuse repeatedly. Exactly. And graceful degradation is a vital concept here. The AI tracks it very closely.
Let's pause on that term for a second, because graceful degradation sounds a bit like corporate jargon for, I don't know, a collapsing building.
It kind of does, yeah.
What is the actual mechanism there? What does that look like in practice for anyone listening who isn't a developer?
Sure. Think about the engineering of a modern car. If the touchscreen console on the dashboard shorts out while you're driving down the highway, the car shouldn't suddenly lose its power steering or anti-lock brakes.
Right. That would be disastrous.
Exactly. The system is engineered so that when a non-essential component fails, it degrades gracefully. The failure is contained.
I see.
The radio dies, sure, but the core functions remain completely intact and return a safe state to the user.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So error handling is essentially how I pack a spare tire.
Ooh, I like that.
Like, does the AI notice if I prepare for a blowout with a full-size spare, a jack, and road flares, meaning I write rigorous, elegant failure states? Or does it see that I just, you know, threw a can of Fix-A-Flat in the trunk and hoped for the best by ignoring potential errors?
Exactly. And more importantly, it looks at when you pack the spare tire.
Ah, interesting.
Do your early drafts completely ignore error handling, proving that you prefer to build the happy path first and you only layer the safety nets on at the very end?
That's definitely what I do.
A lot of people do. Or do you write defensive, heavily fortified code from line one? That temporal data, the actual timing of your safety checks, is a massive part of your coding fingerprint.
Wow.
And as for the fourth pillar, patterns, the system is just isolating the repetitive loops or API calls you make. It's essentially mapping the exact route you drive to work every single day.
Which leaves us with the final two pillars, and these seem to be where the real magic happens. We have improvements and style.
Right.
The document notes that improvements are what you always add in later versions, things like comments, validation, or cleanup. And style is described as basically the combination of all these elements.
The improvements pillar is fascinating. What's fascinating here is that the AI is explicitly hunting for your refactoring velocity.
Refactoring velocity.
Yeah, it analyzes the delta to find your procrastination habits, essentially.
Oh, no, it knows I procrastinate.
It knows. It notes that, say, developer A never writes comments in the initial drafting phase. They only go back and explain their logic once the compiler passes it.
Okay.
But developer B, however, writes out their logic in plain English comments first, and then fills in the code underneath.
So the AI is catching on to the fact that I'm like super messy when I brainstorm, but obsessive when I finalize.
Exactly. And style then emerges organically from the synthesis of those previous five pillars. It proves that coding is not an objective, cold mathematical exercise. It's literally psychology expressed through syntax.
That is profound. Okay, so once the AI has taken my messy charcoal sketch, compared it to my polished oil painting, and extracted these six very personal pillars of my psychology,
yeah,
what does it actually do with them?
Right, the output.
Because the text lays out a specific deliverable. It says the system generates a custom attachment literally called your name's coding framework.
And this completely flips the utility of the AI. I mean, you are no longer downloading a generic template from the cloud that forces you to adapt your thought process to the machine's default output.
Right.
The AI now possesses an encapsulated modular file that defines your specific technical boundaries.
Which is huge. I mean, if you're listening and you are someone who codes daily, the immediate value of a personalized framework like that is obvious.
Oh, absolutely.
But the text goes a step further, and this is where it starts to sound almost like science fiction to me.
Right.
It states that this framework doesn't just mimic your style. It, and I'm quoting here, predicts what you add in later versions.
Yeah, the predictive aspect is wild.
Predicts. How can a language model anticipate my workflow?
Well, because it didn't just study a static snapshot of your work, it studied the vector.
The vector.
Right. Large language models are generally designed to predict the next most likely token, you know, the next word in a sentence. But this framework recalibrates the AI to predict the next phase of your workflow.
Wow. So it anticipates your future actions based on your past trajectories.
Exactly. It knows that when you spin up a new function, you will invariably structure it a certain way, you'll ignore the comments until later, and you'll name the variables with specific casing. It begins proactively building the scaffolding for you before you even ask.
This sounds incredibly advanced.
Sure.
And the source document uses some pretty intense terminology to describe how this framework is actually built.
It really does.
It says the framework, quote, encodes your patterns as CCTTOD, stationary rules, and maps your improvement trajectory as the probability axis.
I know, it's a mouthful.
I'll be honest, CCTOD, stationary rules, sounds like something pulled from a graduate level physics seminar. Can we demystify the math behind the magic for the listeners?
We definitely can. The terminology is dense, but the underlying concept maps perfectly to that idea of a trajectory we were just talking about.
Okay, lay it on me.
Let's look at OD first. In mathematics, an ordinary differential equation, an ODE, is the standard tool used to model dynamic systems over time.
Okay.
It's the math of continuous change, whether you're plotting the orbit of a satellite or the flow of heat through a piece of metal. By applying continuous trajectory models to your code, the framework treats your problem-solving process as a dynamic system in motion.
Here's where it gets really interesting. So it's quite literally treating human creativity as a physics problem.
Yes.
It's calculating the velocity and momentum of my editing process.
In the computational sense, yes.
Okay.
The AI has to quantify human habits to replicate them. And that brings us to stationary rules.
Right, the CCTOD stationary rule.
Right. In any dynamic model, you have constants and you have variables. Stationary rules are the fixed laws. They are the boundary conditions of your personal coding universe.
Give me an example of that.
Sure. If the AI compares your early draft to your late draft and realizes that you always, without fail, use camel case for variables and you never use global variables, those become stationary rules. They are rigid laws encoded into your framework.
They are non-negotiable.
Exactly.
And what about the probability axis? The text says it maps your improvement trajectory as the probability axis.
Well, if the stationary rules are the fixed laws, the probability axis handles the variables, the stochastic fluid elements of your coding style.
Okay, I'm following.
The AI maps the likelihood of a specific transformation happening at time T. So it asks itself, given this rough early stage snippet, what is the probability that this developer will extract this inner loop into a separate helper function?
Oh, wow.
Or what is the probability they will wrap this specific database call in a try-catch block during the final polish?
So it's mapping a curve. It basically plots my habits on a graph, and it traces the likelihood of me making a certain edit.
Exactly. It creates a topographical map of your problem-solving brain.
That is just wild.
The stationary rules act as the bedrock, the unshakable foundation of your style. And the probability axes represent the pathways across that terrain, tracing exactly how your rough ideas evolve into finished logic.
That completely changes the dynamic between the human and the machine. I mean, it moves from just basic generation to actual anticipation.
Exactly.
Which brings us to a crucial phrase in the text, and I think it's the ultimate transformation this document promises. There's a line that asserts this entire process transforms the AI from a generic code generator into something entirely different.
Yeah.
It uses a specific Chinese phrase, "jidao ni zemezuo," which the text translates as "knows how you do it."
Knows how you do it. If we connect this to the bigger picture, that phrase is the core paradigm shift of this entire document.
How so?
Think about how we currently use AI. A generic code generator is essentially just a highly advanced interactive textbook. You feed it a prompt, and it regurgitates the mathematically average, most standard answer compiled from millions of external sources. It's like an oracle on a mountaintop. You ask a question, it hands down a sterile truth, and you are left to integrate that truth into your own messy reality.
Yeah, you're constantly translating the oracle's standard wisdom back into your own dialect.
But an AI that knows how you do it is no longer an oracle. It becomes a digital apprentice.
A digital apprentice. I love that.
Yeah. It has sat beside you at the workbench. It has watched you stumble. It's watched you draft messy ideas. And it's watched you meticulously clean them up. By internalizing those stationary rules and plotting your probability axes, the machine doesn't just know the answer. It knows the specific path your brain takes to arrive at the answer.
The friction just evaporates.
Completely.
I mean, for anyone listening, whether you are a seasoned programmer, being a senior architect dealing with massive code bases, or just a beginner trying to grasp fundamental programming principles, the energy spent fighting your tools is exhausting.
It really is.
You don't have to endlessly prompt engineer the AI to stop using certain libraries or beg it to format things your way. The AI conforms its output to the shape of your logic rather than forcing your brain to conform to its generic output.
The cognitive offloading is massive. Because the AI has learned to think in your native technical language, you can actually maintain your flow state.
Right.
It's a truly symbiotic loop, where the tool anticipates the structural scaffolding, which allows the human to focus entirely on the high-level architecture and the creative logic.
Let's pull back and look at the whole picture here, because this is a really powerful mental model to take away. We started with the frustration of the uncanny valley of productivity tools that are incredibly smart but feel entirely alien.
Right.
And the solution proposed by our source document is so elegant in its simplicity. Feed the system a rough, raw draft, and the finalized, polished version of your work.
Yep. And by analyzing the delta, the physical and semantic space between those two versions, the system extracts the six pillars of your behavioral fingerprint.
Which were structure, naming, error handling, patterns, improvements, and style.
Exactly. And then it runs that data through a mathematical framework, locking in your unbreakable habits as stationary rules, and mapping the evolution of your edits on a probability axis.
So the final deliverable isn't just a block of code. It's a personalized framework that allows the AI to act as that digital apprentice that genuinely, quote, knows how you do it.
You know, while the source document applies this purely to software engineering, the underlying mechanism reveals something profound about human behavior in general.
Oh, for sure.
The concept of comparing an early, raw human attempt to a final, polished human result to decode personal psychology that is universally applicable.
It doesn't just have to be code.
Not at all. And I'd actually leave you listening with this final thought. If a system can mathematically model your thought process and predict your workflow just by looking at the delta of your code, what other areas of your life or work have a measurable delta?
Oh, that's interesting.
What if a system analyzed the frantic, disorganized bullet points of your early meeting notes versus your final polished project pitch?
Wow.
Or the rough draft of a really difficult email versus the version you finally hit send on? What would the delta of your daily communications reveal about your personal psychology, your conflict resolution style, and the invisible rules you use to navigate the world?
The idea that our messy drafting process holds the actual key to our psychological fingerprint is a fascinating thought to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and we'll catch you next time.